Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the warning from former Vice President Dick Cheney that Russian meddling in our elections, quote, in some quarters, that would be considered an act of war, and the concern expressed by the top Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee that the White House's meddling in Congress's Russia investigation is not helping to lift the cloud of suspicion hanging over the Trump administration. A veteran investigator and staff attorney with the Senate Antitrust Subcommittee and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Jack Blum, joins us to discuss why Trump has not done anything to lift the cloud of suspicion over his legitimacy since it was revealed by all 17 U.S. intelligence agencies that the Kremlin interfered in the election to help elect him. Instead, Trump and his aides have doubled down in denials that later proved to be flimsy, if not false. Then, with Trump's evisceration of Obama's efforts to deal with climate change in killing the Clean Power Plan, we will speak with Victoria Herman, the managing director of the Arctic Institute, a Gates Scholar at Cambridge University, and a National Geographic explorer. She joins us to discuss her article at The Guardian, "I Am an Arctic Researcher, Donald Trump is Deleting My Citations," and the dire consequences to the planet that Trump's reversal of the already too little too late efforts to stop global warming will be. Then finally, we will examine further the Trump administration's attack on the centerpiece of Obama's environmental legacy and speak with a former special assistant to the Director of Civil Enforcement at the Environmental Protection Agency, Peter Fontaine. He joins us to discuss how this reversal of direction of efforts to combat global warming will impact the employees of the EPA and the younger generation who will have to live with the consequences. And joining us now is Jack Blum, who is a Washington lawyer who is an expert on white-collar financial crime and international tax evasion. He spent 14 years as a staff attorney with the Senate Antitrust Subcommittee and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and has been a consultant to the United Nations Center on Transnational Corporations, the United Nations Office of Drug Control and Crime Prevention, and served as a chair of the Experts Group on International Asset Recovery. Currently, he serves as chair of the Tax Justice Network USA and the Violence Policy Center. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jack Blum.
Good to talk to you.
Well, it's been a while, Jack, and I remember we've spoken often, but way back during the Iran-Contra, when you were on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee subcommittee, John Kerry led, otherwise known as Drugs and Thugs. But prior to that, you started out looking into housing fraud in 1969, then the IT&T Chilean connections. Then you did the investigation at Lockheed that led to the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. So with that extraordinary experience and in that context, Jack, how do you see this current investigation into alleged ties between the Trump administration and the Trump campaign and Russia?
This is probably the most serious problem, and it has to be investigated. In my view, it's more serious than most of the other scandals we've looked at, because this is direct interference by a foreign power in American politics, undermining the credibility of our democracy. And what makes it really worse than anything I've seen before is a number of people who I would consider questionable have became involved in the Trump campaign, and they had very questionable ties to the Russians. And the more one learns about this, the more questionable the situation becomes.
Well, at this point, it's pretty clear that Devin Nunes, the Republican chair of the House Intelligence Committee, is working possibly and probably at the behest of the Trump administration to thwart, if not blow up, the entire committee's efforts. And we're learning today, of course, that the former acting Attorney General Sally Yates, the White House basically didn't want her to testify, and it looks like Devin Nunes canceled that hearing where she was going to testify along with the former head of the CIA, Brennan, and the former DNI, General Clapper. So there seems to be a pattern here with the Trump people, is they deny meetings with Russians, for example, and then when they're found out, when they're caught, they sort of say, oh, whoops, well, it wasn't really important. You know, we didn't think it was worth mentioning. And this is now happening with Jared Kushner, who's the new advisor in the White House with a portfolio that covers just about everything.
Well, it's quite an astonishing story. We have Mr. Manafort, who had purchased properties in New York City, all cash, through shell corporations, shortly after he got paid $10 million for his activity on behalf of Mr. Deripaska. The notion that somebody who was very actively engaged in helping Putin through one of the wealthiest people in Russia would become the campaign manager for the man who became president is breathtaking. And the idea that there was no contact between the campaign and the Russians, well, the more you know about these connections, the less credible it is that there was no contact.
Well, it looks like Trump Tower had more Russian gangsters in it than any other group of tenants. I mean, the big poker game that went on there was run by a Russian gangster, and there were so many purchases, it looks as though Trump would have to be the piano player in the whorehouse not to have noticed.
Well, I must say that there were a lot of Russians in the building. One of the explanations for that, perhaps somewhat less nefarious than other explanations, is that New York is peculiar in that a lot of buildings have committees that decide who can buy a place in their building. And these Russian gangsters would never be able to get in. And I'm talking now about those very privileged cooperatives on Park Avenue and Fifth Avenue. But here was Trump, who offered a cooperative with no questions asked to a bunch of Russians who were very questionable. So that's part of the reason they were there. But the other part is that buying real estate in New York or wherever, I'm talking now about New York, Miami, Los Angeles, San Francisco, is a great way for somebody to move money out of the country and have an investment that looks clean and pure. And when the right moment comes, you either borrow against the investment or sell it and walk away with a bundle of money. It's pretty clear that a lot of Russians have stripped their country of huge amounts of money by doing just that. And the purchases of apartments in New York and elsewhere certainly facilitated the movement of that money.
So, again, I'm speaking with Jack Blum, who's a Washington lawyer and an expert on white-collar financial crime and international tax evasion. He spent 14 years as a staff attorney with the Senate Antitrust Subcommittee and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and has been a consultant to the United Nations Center on Transnational Corporations, the United Nations Office of Drug Control and Crime Prevention, and served as the chair of the Experts Group on International Asset Recovery. Currently, he serves as chair of the Tax Justice Network USA and the Violence Policy Center. So let's turn to the latest, which is the fact now that the Senate, or the minority chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator Warner, has basically said that the White House is not dispelling suspicions about their connections to the Russians by their behavior. And that would certainly be the case in the broadest sense, because if, as we learn from the all 17 intelligence agencies some time back, they all said in a consensus that Russia had interfered in the elections. It was done at the direction of Vladimir Putin, and it was done to help elect Donald Trump and hurt Hillary Clinton. If Donald Trump were innocent and he would recognize the damage that that charge has to his credibility as a president of the United States, the first thing he would do is go public and dispel this whole idea and get rid of this cloud that hangs over him. But he hasn't done that. And in fact, he seems to be digging the hole deeper. And now, of course, we're learning about his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, meeting with the former KGB or former FSB fellow who's a Putin crony, who is the head of the big Russian bank. In fact, it's the biggest bank in Russia that's under sanctions, the Vnesheekonom Bank. And again, that was something that wasn't disclosed. And then it was found out, and then Kushner basically and Spicer, the White House press secretary, said, that was no big deal. But again, they don't ever admit these meetings until they're found out, and then they make excuses to the extent that they try to dismiss them as being trivial. So to the broader question, Jack, what is going on with Trump? Why does he not want to clear the air?
Well, he can't clear the air. This is a mess, and there's almost no way to walk away from it. Let's just go back and look at where the evidence might be and what evidence might look like. We all understand that our NSA has extensive wiretap and other information about Russian activities. We also know that the FBI has run very extensive counterintelligence operations against the Russians and the U.S. And all of these activities were perfectly legal and not targeting American citizens, but rather, as we've learned through the public discussion, there was incidental collection of information about Americans. Well, that may mean that the various intelligence agencies know quite a bit about contacts between the Trump campaign and the Russians. And this, of course, makes it very awkward for anybody to lie about precisely what happened or to get out there and say, no, I didn't talk to him, or our conversation didn't involve that. Because at bottom, there's a high likelihood that those conversations between the campaign people and the Russians were all things that were picked up and recorded somewhere, and that somewhere in the intelligence world, there's a record of it. All of this makes for very tough stuff. But now there's a second side to this story, which is equally crazy. And that is that after Kushner met with this banker, the Russian bank said, oh, no, no, Kushner said it was just a meet and greet, but it wasn't. We were talking business. Now, that could very well be Russian disinformation in a further attempt to undermine Trump. So what we've walked into here is a hall of mirrors. It is worthy of a top-notch spy novel, but at the moment it's undermining completely the credibility of the administration. And I think the administration has a hell of a problem because they can't say much, and anything they say is likely later to blow up in their face.
So is that to say, then, if the FBI has been investigating Russian mobsters for some time, and this would go back to the late 1980s, or even before, when a number of mobsters came out, all you had to do was say you were Jewish in those days, and you could get an exit visa for a price.
Yep.
So a lot of people, you know, that weren't Jewish got out, and some of them were organized crime. They've still got ties, I believe, to the Russian diaspora in Israel itself. But then you've got all those characters in Brighton Beach, and then you've got all these characters, many of whom ended up in Trump Tower, and this character Felix Sater, who looks as though he may have flipped and has been cooperating with the FBI and naming names. And there's also now a rumor that General Flynn is cooperating with the FBI and naming names. So the plot certainly thickens. But let's just deal with the obvious fact that Russia is a kleptocracy run by the Capo di Capo, the head of the gangsters, a network of gangsters. He regulates them and takes a cut from everybody's business. So there isn't any difference much between a Russian oligarch and a gangster, is there?
That's about right. I would say that there is a collection of Russians who have together looted the country. They've stolen natural resources. They've gathered up tremendous amounts of wealth. And anybody who doesn't go along with Putin doesn't get to be one of the big boys who can steal the country blind. Now, they've also taken that money and gone around the rest of the world running all sorts of business transactions that are questionable. And that has been the target of FBI investigation on the criminal level, as well as intelligence gathering on the counterintelligence level. So this is quite a complicated set of investigations that have somehow managed to intersect in ways that are really very different than anything I've seen before.
And what do you know about the internal FBI dynamics? Because one of the criticisms of the FBI is that they are not an intelligence agency, they're a law enforcement agency. And of course, the job of a law enforcement agency is to catch criminals. The job of an intelligence agency, particularly someone like the CIA, is to actually recruit criminals to spy on their country, or at least to encourage people to break the law. So there's a different culture. So how is the...
Well, there's a much more complicated story in the FBI than that. Half, at least, of the FBI is in counterintelligence, mm-hmm. which is figuring out what the other guys are up to. And this part of the FBI has been the part that's trying to figure out who might be attempting to do acts of terrorism in the U.S., but it also tracks Russian activity in the U.S. So it's the FBI's brief to go after information outside of the U.S., but inside the U.S., it's the FBI counterintelligence people. Now, there are times when the two missions intersect, and it makes life very complicated for all concerned. If somebody becomes an asset for the counterintelligence division, they may not want the criminal side to prosecute any of the people who are involved with criminal activity around this person who's been helping them. It really does get quite complicated, and the question is who will cut through all of that, and how will various congressional committees put all the pieces together, because undoubtedly the information that's been collected on wiretaps and other methods of collecting is going to be very highly classified, because these agencies all want to protect their sources, quite rightly, and their methods. How did they actually get the information? So it's going to be very hard for these agencies to come up with factual information. They're not going to want to do it. And there'll be a real effort to try to cover it all up by saying, well, it's all too classified for you ordinary Americans to figure out. The underlying problem, however, is we all have to figure it out, because it's our democracy.
Well, that could be involved, for example, the case of Felix Sater, who is the former Trump Organization employee who did a pump-and-dump scam, stock scam, involved with the mafia and got nailed. He is somebody that's come up a lot in these investigations, just for the sake of being hypothetical. He could be somebody, for example, that the counterintelligence division would want to protect if he's a conduit or a means to...
Exactly. And in fact, Satter's sentencing was postponed multiple times because the various law enforcement agencies told the judge he was cooperating. And then when he was finally sentenced, the sentence was very minimal. So all of that was based on his cooperation. The question is, what was he cooperating in? Was it a criminal investigation? Was it counterintelligence? Or was it both? We simply don't know at this point.
But we do know that the head of the FBI, James Comey, did dump that finding a week or so before the election that turned out to be quite spurious and very damaging to Hillary Clinton. She blames him for losing the election. Obviously, there were other reasons why she lost. But nevertheless, that's the charge. And as a result, a lot of people are skeptical of Comey. So is it possible? My understanding is that the FBI's counterintelligence division is pretty immune from politics. What's your understanding?
That's a very tough question. My understanding is they're pretty apolitical as well, but that doesn't mean there aren't individuals in their operation who may feel, my God, this is too important and we're going to spring information or we're going to put information out there. It's very hard to decipher. It's like trying to figure out what's going on behind a curtain when all you can see are shadows and motion and occasional flutters of the curtain, but you can't actually see who's there or what they're doing. And in this case, for the good of our governing as a democracy, we better find out what's going on behind the curtain, because this is not a game for agencies cloaked in secrecy to play without any kind of public awareness or knowledge. It's our way of governing, and there are very serious issues at stake. Just today, for example, on the issue of climate change. Now, do we really want to believe that if a president is illegitimate, that his decision to do what he's done about climate change is a legitimate decision based on democratic elections? These are very, very tough questions.
Sure. And, of course, that extends to his nominee to the Supreme Court. But just in closing, Jack Blum, what can the minority do, the Democrats? It looks as if Donald Trump has created a firewall. He's got his buddy Jeff Sessions in there as the Attorney General. He's got two political appointees at the CIA and at the DNI. He's got Richard Burr at the Senate Intel Committee and Nunez, who's proven to be a complete lackey at the House Intelligence Committee. So what can be done? Go ahead.
If history can be a guide here, there are, if not hundreds, thousands of civil servants and people who are operating inside the government who are not only of goodwill, but are very courageous and very patriotic. And it's my belief that somewhere along the line, information of this kind will ultimately come public. Whether it's through a leak, whether it's someone who comes forward to testify, but the combination of journalists and congressional investigations, in my opinion, will eventually open the door to figuring out what's going on.
Well, Jack Blum, from your lips to God's ears, and I thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise. And again, I've been speaking with Jack Blum, who's a Washington lawyer and an expert on white-collar financial crime and international tax evasion. He has spent 14 years as a staff attorney with the Senate Antitrust Subcommittee and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and has been a consultant to the United Nations Center on Transnational Corporations, the United Nations Office on Drug Control and Crime Prevention, and serves as the chair of the Experts Group on International Asset Recovery, and currently he serves as chair of the Tax Justice Network USA and the Violence Policy Center. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back talking with a researcher whose research on global warming has been censored by the Trump administration.